Hello there, and welcome to this informal chat between a lecturer of ours, that is Loughborough University's Dr. Tyler Shendrook, and he is from the Interdisciplinary Centre for Mathematical Modelling and PhD student, Russell Rundle. And the thing they have in common, the reason we're getting them both together, is because they both have links to the Lindau Nobel Laureate meeting, an annual meeting where they invite Nobel Prize winners from quite a few years back up until present day to meet with new, young, aspiring students, young scientists. Tyler visited it in 2016 and Russell is going this summer. Russell was invited to take part in the lectures and the events and the panel discussions after applying to the organisers. And he's going to join about 600 other scientists, young scientists from 88 countries, to visit Lake Constance in the south of Germany. And it starts on the 30th of June and it runs for 6 days until July the 5th. Hopefully he'll get his opportunity to present his own research to some prize winners, which will be fantastic for him. So what we've done, we have lined him up with Dr. Tyler Shendrook, and we're hoping that Dr. Shendrook will give him some great advice, some top tips, and a bit of wisdom about his own experiences of attending 3 years ago. Thank you very much. Enjoy. Right, we're here with Tyler Shendrook and Russell Rundle. Tyler was at the Lindau meeting in 2016, so he's a veteran and he knows all about it. And Russell is just preparing to go, so I'll ask them a little bit about themselves. Tyler first, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm in the mathematics department in the Interdisciplinary Center for Mathematical Modeling, which is this group of physicists in the maths department that like to apply theoretical physics techniques to sort of non-traditional problems. So I'm a biophysicist. I like to simulate how bacteria swim through environments, the motion of fluids that spontaneously flow on their own because they have an internal energy source inside of them. So you can think of that like a biological energy source like that powers our motion. Yeah, so those are the sort of things that we do in the ICMM.
Okay, and so in 2016, you obviously weren't doing this. What were you doing then? You were a biologist?
Biophysicist. So I was trained as a physicist, but I'm interested in materials, exotic materials, and because evolution has driven such complex processes, it's needed to drive the creation of complex materials too to keep up. So because I'm interested in materials, I'm most interested in biological materials because it's just so exciting what's going on in the biological world. I was studying that in 2016 when I went. I was mostly interested then in swimming microbes, in how bacteria and other moving microorganisms move through their environment.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Excellent. Russell, right, so tell us a bit about yourself. What do you do? How long have you been here?
So I'm in the third year of my PhD here, and I basically just look at quantum mechanics through a lens of phase-based methods. That basically means that I look at the probability distributions of quantum systems. And so very early on, I had the chance to play on IBM's quantum computer that's available to everyone and basically apply the phase-based methods that my group was working on to directly measure this phase space. It's kind of this kind of methodology of measuring the phase space to understand what's happening in these quantum systems has a lot of history, such as Sergey Ross, who is going to be at the Lindau meeting. He measured this Schrodinger cat, the famous Schrodinger cat in phase space. So we wanted to do something like that, but with this new, different type of quantum system. So doing that, we're kind of looking at signatures of things like entanglement and superposition, these kind of funny ideas that people may have heard of, especially if you watch The Big Bang Theory, for example. But how can you kind of see it in experiments? And so there's a lot of research around quantifying entanglement, but we want to see how do we kind of visually see it.
And IBM took that on, didn't they? They took that system on, didn't they?
Yeah. So we're now on IBM's Qiskit, they call it, through their website, we got a Jupyter notebook on there, just showing you how we did our methods, how we did our results. So it's all through Python on a Jupyter notebook, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So, I mean, the reason, why we've got you together is because I want Tyler to impart some wisdom upon Russell with regard to the meeting and you know, sort of tell us a little bit about your experiences there. How would you sum it up? You were there in 2016. What kind of things did you experience? Right. Who did you talk to?
It's a huge, overwhelming experience. So there's thousands of attendees there. There's all of these Nobel laureates who are very imposing, that you sort of know their work or at least know their names before you even arrive. So the way that I approached it was to sort of pick the people ahead of time that I wanted to meet, sort of pick the topics ahead of time that I wanted to engage with a little bit, and try to meet some attendees there who also had those interests, because the interests of the attendees are much broader than a traditional physics conference or workshop where you have attendees who are all interested in exactly the same thing as you. So this is not like that whatsoever.
Was it hard to pin people down? Because I presume that there was sort of 600 other people all with the same idea.
Absolutely. But because everybody's sort of searching for their people, networks very rapidly form. And so I did actually end up meeting people who had the same sorts of interests that I did.
I was going to say, have you had a look at the list yet? Have you had any ideas of who you want to?
Oh, yeah. So I've looked through it. And there's a couple of guys I want to talk to, get over the kind of imposter syndrome and try not to be scared of asking stupid questions, because,
Well, apparently there are no stupid questions, but that...
Only very smart people can ask stupid questions. Yeah.
Brilliant. What impact did the meeting have on you, on your career? Do you think it helped you in a way? Did it give you a platform to...
Well, what it was really great for was learning how to talk to other physicists who I know are very smart about my work and why they should be interested in it. So often a scientist talking to different audiences, those audiences can sort of split into two types: either experts like you, or the general public. It's pretty rare that we get the chance to really talk science with people who are also physicists, practicing working physicists, but maybe a neutrino physicist or hard condensed matter physicist. So that was the first time that I had really gotten to do that in the surroundings of a huge group of people.
That's interesting, actually. So how different is the language between like a biophysicist and a quantum physicist? Do you come together and just merge, or are you...
Absolutely not.
No.
But that being said, there are communities that are better at this and communities that are worse at this. So for instance, astronomers are great at talking to the public. I mentioned that I'm a biophysicist. We are necessarily between two worlds. So we have to be able to explain to physicists why our work is important, but we also have to be able to explain to biologists why our work is important. So I'm sort of lucky that I fall in that space. I don't know what it's like in the field of quantum mechanics.
Well, quantum's kind of a broad thing anyway. So I try and go more into the quantum information side, but still it's at least there you share the mathematics. But even if you go too deep on one side in the mathematics, even the mathematics is confusing to another person because terminology is different. So it's doable within like the small subsection of the quantum field. But as you go bigger, like I'm not so good at the more experimental side. So I need to ask lots of questions to understand what some experimenters are doing, because they just say words and they're abstract words to me, and I'm like, what is this physically? Like,
and how about with the public side of things? Because there's a lot of sort of misconceptions and very sort of skewed abstract ideas when it comes to quantum physics that are just completely incorrect. Can you give an example of things?
Yeah, so the most famous stuff is the ideas of, superposition and entanglement, which have been taken over by people that write books like The Secret, which means, like, I think something's going to happen, so it's going to happen. But it's basically the early people doing quantum who said things in a certain way that got mysticized, It's not actually that way. It's just, it's intrinsically difficult to talk about these subjects, so it's very easy to add this woo to it. So quantum is very susceptible to this woo from these kind of, dancing masters of Tao kind of people. So, yeah.
Is it because somebody has come along once with a very easily understandable way of describing something,
yeah,
and nobody else has a better way, so you just go with it. Even though it's slightly...
It's an analogy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's
quite wrong in some cases.
Yeah, yeah. And then quotes like from, you know, Feynman that say things like, I mean, I don't blame him, but it's like, if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't understand it. So this leads people to say things like, you know, the argument is how you don't understand it. I'm not wrong. How do you know I'm wrong? So,
But I mean, so in some way, even the simple things, sort of the is it Niels Bohr's sort of... description of an atom.
Yeah, I was watching The Chase the other day, and they asked the question, what do you call it, orbits the nucleus? And they said, electrons. No, it doesn't. It lives in a probability cloud around the people, you know, it's an easier model. Planetary model's easier to understand, and it's everywhere at the same time as a probability distribution.
But does that, I mean, with regard to when children are learning that at school, does that matter?
I'd say it doesn't matter, but I'm of the opinion that it also doesn't matter to tell them the truth, because what you're telling them is abstract ideas anyway, and they're just going, they then leech onto these ideas. So I was first taught quantum when I was 16, and the teacher kept telling us how unintuitive it was. But it's like, I haven't really fully developed my intuition yet, so it's not that weird to me. You're telling me it's this way, and I have to kind of figure it out. So it's much better to just tell them and then let them think about it, rather than tell them it's weird.
Yeah.
We feel a little bit more comfortable with this in the realm of simulations, physics simulations. So we'll often, because I'm often studying squishy, soft materials, we'll often coarse grain over the details in a way that's easier for the computer to handle, but doesn't quite get all of the microscopic precision right. In my field, we're far more comfortable with the idea that these things that we use to study real, tangible materials are all just models of one kind or another. Some of them are more precise, some of them are less precise. They all have their uses in a time and place.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back to the meeting, what stuck out the most for you when you were there?
Well, when I was there, the year that I was there, Mars, the chocolate company, held a breakfast, and it was all centered around soft condensed matter physics, which is the technical term for
that
aspect of what I... Yeah, that's right, exactly. It's soft, it's condensed in that it's not air, and we study it physically, so that's soft condensed matter physics. And that was wonderful, because that was the first place where I sort of... saw all of the other attendees at the Lindau conference that were also interested in this topic. And there was a panel that discussed sort of the cutting edge of where the field was and where it was going. And it was wonderful to hear Stephen Chu, who's a new Nobel Prize winner in our field, talk about where he saw the field going.
Okay. So that's interesting that both the events that you've mentioned that you enjoyed weren't actually any of the keynotes, it was the social events.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'd really recommend that. Search out these smaller events where there's spaces with less people that are sort of less ritualized. The conference is very ritualized in that there are politicians there. It's a really important part of the culture of the city and the country. So when you can find these places where people are willing to take off their tie and just take a moment to be with you and other young physicists, that'll be a real treat, I think.
And Russell, have there any of the events that stand out to you? I know that you mentioned Serge Hirosh.
Yeah, I'd like to basically hear what he and both Weiland as well. They just did basically the same thing in different ways, different directions. But, I'm very interested in their kind of this light matter interaction. I'm very interested in that kind of side of stuff. So those are the people who stick out most for me. Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to come away with, sort of a new understanding of something, or
a postdoc would be great.
Yeah. How easy is that?
That's always a tricky thing. Yeah. It certainly helps to get put in the right room with people that you respect that you might be interested in working with. That really is better than an email.
That was Tyler and Russell. Russell, who will be going to the Lindau Nobel meeting between June the 30th and July the 5th. Best of luck to him. I hope he's got lots of tips to make the most of the experience. And if you're going, and if you've enjoyed listening to it, hopefully Tyler has been able to give you some good advice too. Thank you very much.